HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I am joined by Johnny Campbell. Johnny is the founder and CEO of Social Talent. Johnny, how are you? Welcome to the HR Headquarters podcast.
I'm doing great, Declan. Thanks for having me.
Johnny, tell us a little bit about Social Talent, what you guys do.
I guess what we do is we help organizations build better workplaces. What the hell does that mean? We're a learning platform, kind of like Masterclass for the enterprise. Work with businesses like Paramount Pictures, Disney, Accenture, IKEA, to basically enable their workforces to hire better, onboard better, develop talent, lead talent, manage talent better. So it's kind of, you can imagine, scale learning platform, real high quality training courses from best speakers in the world and all those different topics that our customers use to kind of scale that knowledge across the business to try and build a better culture, more talent-focused, more employee-focused, that drives a better workplace.
And Johnny, I'm always fascinated when I talk to anyone who's founded an organization. What made you form, or what made you start Social Talent? What did you see missing in the commercial environment, or, you know, what instigated it?
I won't pretend there was some revelation. I saw a gap I felt compelled to fill. Kind of a combination of, I'm unemployable, Declan, to be honest with you. I am somebody who does not like authority, not great working for bosses. I've managed to work for some great bosses over the years who've managed to, I guess, leverage my skills without suffocating me. But my last boss before I set up this business with my business partner, Vince, was not a nice person, and I did not work well with that person. And I was determined, now is the time I'm going to do this. But actually, I wanted to run a business since I was probably 10 years of age, Declan, right? My dad ran his own business, kind of construction business. And I always just saw myself as running my own business and having employees. Like, just it was always a thing I was going to do. I didn't have a clue what I was going to do it in. When I found myself in recruiting in 2008 and decided I want to set up a recruitment agency, and I found an unlikely lad in a bar in the Cayman Islands who's also from Ireland, and persuaded him to join me, and the rest of this is history.
So recruitment was the starting point. You fell into it, as recruitment was my starting point sort of as well, and similarly fell into it. What attracted you to it, and why did you decide to stay in it, albeit, you know, you've iterated since then?
I'll try not to make this too long a story, but back in 98, I was graduating from UCD and I was working 40 hours a week in the Pod nightclub. You remember the Pod in Dublin too, running the members bar there. And I was out looking for a job. I'd done a business degree, which is your generic, don't know what I want to do with my life type of degree, but I want to work somehow in an office. And I was interviewing with recruitment agencies and I got actually mixed up. I applied for a recruiting job without knowing it and thought I was just, you know, rocking up to see what jobs they had for graduates. And so I bluffed it, got a job for recruitment at the end of 5-6 interviews, and found myself 10 years later running a recruitment agency in the Caribbean, and wanted to set one up for myself and found someone to do it with me. Didn't want to do it by my own. I kind of had learned that lesson over the 10 years. Thought I knew everything about recruiting, of course. Thought I know everything now in 10 years experience. So I run my own shop, and then the recession hit. And that was an absolute nightmare. And we had our first baby born that September. And through kind of needs must, we managed to figure out how to use this new emerging world of social to actually do our recruiting over 2009 and 2010, difficult years. And Social Talent was kind of born out of those first 2 years of our recruitment agency, when we realized that we had a decision to make. We were like, do we become the only recruitment agency we know to use social media to recruit? Unlikely that we'll be the only company. So That's one thing to do. Or do we become the company who trains everybody else how to do this properly? And we kind of felt that was the better bet. And Social Talent was set up 12 years ago. And we've kind of evolved the business from helping largely Irish recruitment agencies, small ones at the time, who were really supportive of us to try and take a risk, to bigger agencies and then larger corporates. And we expanded that remit of kind of fixing hiring to kind of fixing more of the issues in the business. You know, from my perspective, I always thought like I could solve so many problems by training all the recruiters in the world to be better. And, you know, we've trained several million people in recruitment over the last 10 or 12 years. But actually you learn as you do that it only goes so far, because all the folks that they hire and hopefully hire better go into an organization that may be dysfunctional. There may be a bad onboarding process. They may not have an inclusive environment. Their boss might be an asshole. It's not set up right. And, you know, the way to fix it all is out there. You know, it's being done by other companies in different ways. And we kind of figured, like, listen, we'd set this business up in the broom cupboard of an accountancy office in Leakslip and started making videos and putting them on the web. And actually, if you just use that skill of a video you can put on the internet and get it out there, you can actually really influence a huge number of people, even as an Irish startup with, you know, a small group of people trying to change the world of recruiting. We kind of grew some grit, if you like, and you know, we realized, you know, we could actually do a lot more. And that's where we are today, which is, okay, let's not just stop at recruiting. You know, so it's kind of, it wasn't a particular problem that I was trying to solve 12 years ago, but it was, you know, when we looked at recruiting and figured recruiting can be much better, and 99.9% of people aren't doing it well enough, and they could, if they just knew the way we had learned, if they just knew that, they could be better. And then you start thinking about, well, what if they also knew this other way you could be better at managing people, running a business, you know, motivating a team. And this isn't our knowledge, by the way, Declan. This is when you find people around the world who you know, written a great book or on a podcast like yourself, or they've, you know, presented at a conference, or just they're vocal at a pub telling the world how to do things better. And you go, if I just put that person in front of a camera and do it really well, I can send that out to the world, and hopefully we can do a little bit better by every company out there.
And just before we get into this sort of that skill set bit that you're referring to, or what those people can teach you, what's your take on the current state of the recruitment industry? Obviously, it's been some fairly high profile, particularly in the tech sector, have, you know, laid off recruiters and people in that HR space. What's your general take on it?
Like, late 21 and early 22 were mental. Like in 20 years and 25 years in recruiting, I've never seen anyone I speak to who's of a similar ilk or age would say the same thing. Never saw a market like it. Never saw such recruiting demand for recruiters, salaries of recruiters. It was insane, right? It was overinflated. So the bubble needed to be burst a bit, right? Because we were just making up for the complete cessation of the economy, right, back in 2020. And it just accelerated off. This is just a balancing out. Like I talk to recruiting leaders every day of the week, whether they're in-house or they're running RPOs or running staffing agencies. And they're all telling me that it's kind of balanced out. They're not growing anywhere near the rate that they were at the start of the year. The tech company stuff doesn't represent a large part of the economy, right? We look at the amount of tech jobs, and even in Ireland, where it does represent a decent size of our economy, you know, it's a drop in the ocean compared to retailers having a decline, or the construction industry back in 2008 when that went into decline. That's a serious effect in the economy. A bunch of, and no offense, reasonably well-off middle-class people in tech jobs who largely have degrees and loads of opportunities being laid off, while to each individual, it can be really, really difficult at the time. In the grand scheme of things, it's not an issue in that, you know, you look at the stats, particularly from the US, where the layoffs maybe are larger in the tech sector in places like San Francisco. Most of those people were back in employment, something like 76% back in employment within 3 months, half of them on a higher salary. Like they aren't destitute. You know, I felt unbelievably for people back in 08, 09 and 10, particularly in Ireland, when you construction workers, retail workers, everyone laid off. We got up to late teens in terms of unemployment. That was real unemployment. People who were on the breadline when they lost their jobs, who were really stuck, right? And really had to figure it out. This is somebody who maybe got overextended on their mortgage and is going to struggle for a month or two. They'd be grand, right? And the numbers aren't that big. And in fact, what we're seeing, and I'm hearing from our customers and people I talk to in the industry, is that the hiring, particularly, let's say, in tech, if you can focus on tech, where the perhaps downturn has been, it's the traditional industries who now are taking advantage, whether it's retail or whether it's banking or construction, and they're being able to pick up the tech talent that they couldn't afford to hire a year ago, right? So, you know, people aren't going back into the same large US corps in a tech role. Maybe they don't have the same benefits, but they're finding jobs in startups. Like, we're an Irish company, right? We have been challenged hiring tech staff because we can't afford the benefits packages and the salaries of the US corps. So Irish companies can now compete again. So I think it's kind of overhyped and overinflated. And recruiters on the ground, we're not going to see the growth that we saw in the last couple of years. Some teams, as folks leave, they're going to not replace those people. And they're going to look for more efficiencies next year. But I don't think it's a bad thing. And it's nothing like the recessions we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think you're contextualizing it quite well there. I think or framing it quite well there. As you say, it's for an individual, of course, it's a big thing. But in the sort of the macro economy, it's a drop in the ocean, as you say.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
When you started talking about when you started Social Talent, Johnny, you were talking about the ability to put a YouTube video up there and get it out to a mass audience, I guess. What is the recruitment skill set now you see in demand, or what are those tools or what not tools? What are those skills that people need to have or develop if they're in that recruitment space?
Well, so if you look at what people wanted when we started the business, the market seemed to want to know how to find talent, because we were completely reliant on private databases up until the mid to late noughties, right? And a lot of the staffing agencies had those databases, or maybe the large employers who had a lot of applicants, they had large databases. But otherwise, you kind of needed headhunters to bring somebody up, get a CV, check it out. And then social media changed all that and put everyone's details on the web, right? And then, you know, the internet had better details on your own employees than you did, right? In terms of somewhere like LinkedIn. So it was all about search, how to find them. Then it was, how do you advertise to those people? So there was very particular skill sets, very kind of what you might call hard skills around how do you source, how do you search, run a Boolean search string, send a good message. But what we've seen over the last 10 years, that's evolved. And the role of what you might call the soft, or what we call the core skills, are ever more increasingly important. And what they are, Declan, are the traditional, I'll go back to a training session I did about 9 years ago. And I was training a team actually from Sigma Recruitment in Dublin in a classroom over by Halfpenny Bridge. And a woman came in and she was like, how are you, Johnny? I'm really sorry. I'm just not brilliant on computers. I'm one of those old school recruiting people who's just much better on the phone and talking to people. And I was saying to her, I said, you're the hard thing to train. You know, don't worry about the technical stuff. Like, I can teach you how to use LinkedIn, teach you how to send better emails. But the stuff that you have is the stuff that no one else can do, who can get great at the Boolean string writing. And I look fast forward to today, and it's those softer skills, the communication skills. Like, from an in-house perspective, if you're a manager of a sales team, Declan, or a manager of an engineering team, you have a problem. And the problem is, I'm not getting product out the door fast enough. Or we have, you know, errors in our software. Are we not making enough sales, right? And you want someone to help solve that for you from a people perspective, right? So you look, let's say, traditionally to a recruiter and you go, here's the job spec and go find me that person. The skills I'm seeing that we see, you know, great recruiters looking for today are the ability to work with that hiring leader and understand her problems and offer her solutions, right? To kind of have a bit an insight in terms of what does the market look like, right? Which, to your point about macro and micro, you need to get into the macro, what's happening in the world around me, my competitors, the skill sets, salary levels, who's in demand, who's not in demand, and then into the micro, what are individuals looking for? You know, what triggers will motivate them. I need to be able to work them with the hiring manager to go, listen, I think we can hire this kind of person for you, or maybe we can, and this is the even more progressive view of it, we can upskill some of your team, or we'll look at it differently. Maybe we can bring someone from a different department over and retrain them and then replace that role, because I can replace that role easier. And actually, it's not that difficult to upskill the person from this other team to do the role over here. You know, we're seeing at the moment a lot of the tech companies are taking recruiters and they're turning them into SDRs or BDRs, sales development and business development reps, because the principles are the same, right? And this doesn't require a whole lot of retraining. So that kind of mobility is happening. And it's a lot the softer skills. And then there's the base intelligence of the market. And then, you know, you communicate with the candidates. It's about how do you then persuade those candidates? What are their motivators? How do you sell to those candidates and understand their needs? Like, none of it's about writing the Boolean search string or using a piece of software, right? Really, it's about the kind of higher level intelligence, right? And I always felt that's the more interesting part of recruiting, is understanding those problems. So we're seeing this shift, and I'm going to predict it now that in the next 2 to 3 years, you'll see what we call in the corporate world of recruiting a talent acquisition advisor, very American kind of phrase that we've borrowed in Ireland as well. And they're going to move to be more what you might call a talent partner. So you'll see folks, and we're seeing it in some of our clients at the moment, the more progressive, fast growing ones, where they have talent teams. And those talent teams don't just advise on recruiting, they're advising on a more holistic view of upskilling, mobility, training, diversity, and of course, hiring. So that's kind of, that's definitely where I see the skill set moving in the future.
And there, I agree with what you're saying there. Fundamentally, I think your example of the Sigmar person coming in and having that ability to pick up the phone, I think that bit was a little bit lost as the technology evolved. I could share numerous times where I've been connected with on LinkedIn saying, are you interested in something? But no one's actually tried to establish a relationship with me by picking up the phone or having that conversation. And I think that bit probably has been lost a bit. An interesting thing you mentioned there, Johnny, and I do agree, which is around mobility internally. I think that will be a big thing for organizations. How do companies successfully go about, like for your example of the recruiter going to a BDR or a business development rep, how do companies approach that in making sure that the internal candidate is suitable for the new role and B, understanding what the gap in the skills is and training them?
Yeah, it's a hard one. How do you do it and how are they doing it are perhaps different questions, right? So when I look at the bigger theme is sustainability, right? And that's what's driving a lot of this. We talk about sustainability and ESG efforts massively at the moment in different businesses. And it's about sustainable talent. And why do we need sustainable talent? Because just like resources like oil and gas, there's a limited supply. It's running out. Right. And you look at talent, there's a limited supply. It has ran out in a lot of sectors, in a lot of roles, and not just tech roles, right? I was in a bar on Capel Street last week. I was going to the Avatar 2 premiere. We dropped in for a pint at a bar on Capel Street beforehand. The bar was rammed, two staff working there, because they can't get staff, right? So it's not just the highly skilled folks. So you have to start looking at, okay, we have people in our business, but maybe they're not doing the right kind of job or not doing the job we want people to do in the future, right? The easiest example to think of is a bank, right? We have cashiers and clerks that we no longer need, but we need tech skills to develop mobile apps and banking payments and all this kind of nonsense, right? How do you basically, rather than letting go loads of people and then rehiring the same amount of people but with different skills, how do you basically retrain the workforce? One of the first challenges you have is just defining the skills. And there's a big kind of gold rush in the software providers today around doing this, building taxonomies that we all agree on, like LinkedIn Learning and LinkedIn itself have a taxonomy they're proposing from their kind of knowledge graph or economic graph from the LinkedIn platform. Workday have a kind of skills taxonomy that they're pushing on their customers. Degreed, one of the learning providers, has one that they've developed. Everyone has a taxonomy, right? You have to kind of agree on what do we call a skill, right? And then we have to define what jobs need those skills and then what do people have and what are transferable skills? How long does it take to upskill somebody? And you can get lost in that kind of rabbit hole of definition of skills. But I don't think it's you need to go too deep. Like there's some people saying, you know, we have 3,278 skills mapped, right? Do you? Like, does that make it an easier problem to solve? I don't think it does. Whereas you kind of get down to keep it simple. And then try and look at its core, what are the clusters of skills, right, that are transferable? Because some skills just take years to learn, right? Like you're not going to make someone a theoretical physicist from a cashier job tomorrow. Right? That's just not going to work. But if they have the ability to influence sell, but there's a bit of technicality to it, right? Well, how much technicality is there? There's a bit of a software they can use, they have to use, and they can learn that in a month. And then the other stuff is transferable and they can upskill in 2 months. That could be done. You know, are they really good at math? And then coding is just essentially math. So are there some coding languages that we could get someone upskilled in 3 months, right? Amazon recently announced something like 1.6 billion of investment going into learning. And they've got 9 different projects that's going into. But one of them is on teaching their warehouse staff how to be software developers. Like this program they have, something like 62 or 63% of the uptake has been in their warehouse environment, which is massive, right? Like the big logistical environment, but typically underskilled, not college educated, and more marginalized, right? And they're able to basically upskill that population. You know, there's no rush to do it. It's at the pace that suits the employee. And then they're filling the pipeline for the software engineering roles. It's amazing because like the person coming out of the warehouse doubles their salary. They're typically more likely to be from a a disadvantaged socioeconomic background. So it does more good for society. And it's actually cheaper for Amazon to hire this way. You know, and I've spoken to businesses, some of our customers in the tech space who've, you know, looked at these kind of communities that are underserviced, right? Whether they're folks who have disabilities and they could be cognitive or physical disabilities, people from marginalized background, whether it be race, religion, refugees, etc. And they're leveraging these communities and not primarily out of the societal good, but because they're going saying there's really bright people in here with great skills and no one's hiring them. And we'd be mad not to go after them. And the data suggests that you can hire them at half the cost, right? Half the cost of hiring. And their retention rates are much, much better. And you drive double the diversity in your organization, which leads, as we all know in the data, to more innovation, better profits, better growth, all these things, right? So the connection of just, you know, moving people around, which sounds like a simple concept, moving them around, it drives so many positive outcomes. But it does start with just identifying what are the common skills that we need. And it's not, it's less about like, you know, when I started in recruiting, Declan, you know, I was always hiring people for experience. You know, you're an accountant, you have to, it's a qualification for sure. If it's a company in Monaghan that make trucks, right? Then you have to find someone who's from an automotive background, right? These days you're going, like, you're not going to look for this, the experience, because it's probably not likely to, you know, it's not likely that you'll find somebody. What are the core skills this person needs to be able to do? And increasingly we're looking at less the hard skills, like being an accountant, and more the softer skills, the kind of core skills, if you like, that are communication, you know, they're able to think on their feet, they're able to lead a team, all these different types of things. And they're the things that we're trying to figure out, okay, who has that we can transfer into a new role? It's not easy, but more and more effort's been put into it. And it's beginning to work for a lot of organizations.
Do you think, Johnny, that a person's, when you're assessing a new joiner, even though you might be hiring them for one particular thing at that moment in time, do you think their cognitive ability or their ability more so to learn will become more and more of a thing that people try to assess so they'll have that career portability or mobility within the organization going forward?
Yeah, I gave a talk about 6 years ago on this and gave Accenture as the example. And this was 6 years ago. Accenture were publicly stating that they had moved from many years ago hiring for IQ, intelligence, right, academics, to EQ, the kind of more emotional side, to what they called 6 years ago LQ, the learning quotient, which was the ability to be more plastic in your skill set, because they had given up at that point trying to predict what skills the future workforce needed. But what they did know was that it was going to be ever changing. So rather than trying to predict the skills and hire for them, they said, we need people who can change a lot in their skill set, because that's what the world will need going forward. So this idea of hiring for plasticity or for high LQ or whatever you might want to call it, that's been around for a while and is growing. And you see it again in hiring practices like the likes of Amazon, who have the hiring bar that a lot of us know a lot about, and some might disagree with. But what they do in Amazon, what they do in Google, I'm not saying that this is the only way to do it or the best way to do it. You're not allowed just hire for your team. People are appointed to hire for the business. And what they do is they hire primarily for the organization. And then the second level is for the team. So you have a role that you're hiring for, Declan. In either of those organizations, the hiring committee or the hiring bar committee, they would go, well, okay, look at the candidates. And first of all, are these good employees for Amazon or for Google? Yes, pass the bar, then we pass it on to, are they suitable for Declan's role? Whereas the reverse is what happens in most organizations. Is it good for Declan's role? Is the person good for Declan's role? She is, she's fantastic. Is she good for the company? Let's not worry about that too much. She's good for Declan's role, so good enough, we move on, right? So there is that focus on the longevity, and back to that word, sustainability, of the talent in the organization, and saying we need to get 3, 4, 5, 6 careers out of this person in the organization, ideally, and only hire people who could give us that flexibility, give us that plasticity.
Yeah, really good point. Yeah, very interesting that approach. It makes absolute sense, but I, to be fair, I haven't heard it before. Johnny, how do you guys approach training with organizations?
Well, we do is try and do it on scale. So, you know, with companies like Accenture, 700,000 users can access our platform, Paramount Pictures, you know, something like 90,000 users can access our platform. We can't do it like I did in the old days going into classrooms. And post-COVID, that's just not how people are doing it on scale. So it's an on-demand learning platform with a wide library we add to constantly of the best speakers in the world, filmed really high quality content, 3 minutes at a time, short 20-minute courses that gets an 80% completion rate and a 90 CSAT score. So, you know, 9 out of 10 rating, which is higher than most movies you'll go see. It's higher than Avatar 2, higher than Titanic got, any of those movies, right? That's the kind of quality content, because we recognize that people log on to our platform, they log on to Disney Plus, Netflix, and these kind of media every day, and they expect really high quality, not the crappy kind of learning content that's been churned out over the years. And they want variety of content. They want variety of speakers. So we deliver that platform on scale. Millions of people can log on, learn at their own pace, different paces in teams and cohorts. And we constantly bring new ideas and new innovation to that. We look for speakers all over the world, and we're interested if anyone has an idea of how they believe somebody should, you know, run a team better, hire better. We're always interested in bringing new speakers into the platform because we're hungry for new ideas.
Brilliant. And that perfect segue. Johnny, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Anyone who hasn't met or seen Johnny speak before, I'd highly encourage it. A very engaging person, knows a lot about the industry. Johnny, if someone wants to continue the conversation, what's the best way to get in contact?
Google Social Talent, Google Johnny Campbell. For my personal details on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you want to find us, socialtalent.com or anywhere we are online, you'll find us. If you can't find us, we're not doing our jobs right.
Brilliant. Backing yourself. I love it, Johnny. Thanks a million.
Pleasure. Thanks, Declan.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.